Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. I'm Bill, and that's Wendy. Welcome to the Thursday version of our show. We're located at 312-981-7200. Should you want to join in? Hello, Wendy.
I have spring fever. Can I just tell you that?
It's hard not to on a day like today. This is what
we've been
fighting for this. And so as you don't get too excited, it's supposed to snow in a few more days.
See, that is just not right nor fair.
Once you get to this, you should say, we should keep this. This is what we want.
And I know that the weather fluctuates, okay? The temperature, the degrees, what have you. But once it gets like to 69 or 70, which yesterday my car said 69, it shouldn't snow anymore. The snow should be finished. It could get a little, 30-ish, but no more snow. Come on.
All right. I'm in.
My bulbs are coming up. They don't know what to do.
I'm hoping you're referring to your flowers.
That's
my own. Oh, you're not?
No.
Whatever. That's fine. whenever people ask me about you, they say, tell me about Wendy. What's it like working with Wendy? And I always say, you know how a lot of us use oxygen? I say Wendy uses conflict. Conflict is Wendy's oxygen. And they go, what does that mean? And I will explain what it means. In the last few minutes here in the studio, you've been going crazy because we're giving away White Sox tickets and nobody told you which number caller is going to win the White Sox tickets. So you're furious.
I'm not furious. I listen to this radio station and I have not heard a promo come up that says when you hear a White Sox song, be a certain number caller. So I'm confused. I want the listener to have every chance to win a 4-pack of tickets.
And they should. But it's
funny. I'm not mad.
They don't tell us what number caller. And I go, well, you just got to pick a number. And then that number caller. And then also, all the monitors are slightly off.
Oh, yeah,
I
was mad.
So on each of the, as you moved each of the monitors, are you aware of what you did?
Did I grunt?
Yeah. like Lou Ferrigno lifting weight.
I cannot, there is a 16th of an inch, maybe even a 1/24th of an inch spot that I can move that down. So that's why I grunted, because I couldn't get it in there.
It's just funny because on a daily basis, stuff that most of us will go, I'll just pick a number caller, I'll just move the monitor. You get so incensed, so angry about it.
I really wasn't angry.
You yelled at Jasmine over something she had no control over.
I don't know why you pick on Jasmine like that.
What did I yell at Jasmine about?
I don't know. You said so.
Did I yell at you?
Jasmine, what was the go-between with Wendy? She yelled at you for something.
She didn't necessarily yell at me. She was just like, and why? One of those comments.
I don't think it's fair to the listener. I'm sorry. I am a listener to this radio station.
Yes.
And Bill had a great way to give away the Sox tickets, and we can't do that. We have to do it in a way that was predetermined.
Right.
That didn't bother you?
No. I don't care. As long as somebody gets the tickets and enjoys the game, I don't care.
Who knows when to call or what to do?
But that's one of those times where instead of like being, filled with strife and conflict, you go, we'll figure it out.
You'll tell them when it's time, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell them. Bill will handle it.
Tell them to listen to the whole dang show, and when it's time, you'll find out.
It's at 10:20, so...
told them the time.
They know the time, so... You know, the listeners are very pliable people. You know, whatever we throw their way, they'll go, oh, okay, there's a number, and I'll be caller number 9. This is just an example. It's not the actual number. So I'll try my best.
See, now you're confusing them. Now I'm going to get more mad.
I don't want that. You wouldn't like me when I'm mad. No, everything will be fine. I'm confident.
All right. They're calling now, so explain.
No, do not call now, everybody. At 10:20, that's when.
All right. You know what? My oxygen is conflict. Yours is confusion.
I'm not confused by any of it. Whatever happens, I just go, all right, that's fine.
Well, that's where you and I differ.
I mean, but it's just fun to watch. Like sometimes I step back and I go, okay, there's nothing that could possibly go wrong. Everything is in its place. And then you come in and you just go, and I go, no, it's all right.
Here's the
fine.
Thing. I don't even know I'm doing it because I move on to the next thing. So I'm like dervish.
No, there's no doubt about that.
So I'm not really mad. I'm just reacting.
I know.
And then I move on to the next reaction, which could be good, could be bad.
But so seriously, though, you understand when you react that way, people who are ultra sensitive to conflict.
Yes.
Me.
Yes. Yes.
Are brought down by that.
Most of the conflict here,
you go
Bertrand.
Again.
So I don't really understand.
You guys are too sensitive. You're picking on Wendy.
No, I'm just saying. Total
no one ever sticks up for me. Thank you.
Well, Mary, it's just like,
I didn't do anything.
Because I'm the same way, Wendy. I walk around my house and go, oh, you know, my husband's like, you're complaining about everything. I go, I am. I don't even notice.
Well, that's the thing. You don't notice, but you have an impact on other people who are the recipient, unwitting recipients of
it. We're sorry, but deal with it.
That hurts my feelings, Mary.
Oh, God.
But for me, it's so foreign because I live in a house with three women, but they all don't, they handle it the exact opposite of you. Like, they're even more complacent than I am. Our house could be on fire and Terry will go, oh, no, look at this. I got a fire going in the house.
Well, you're lucky.
Oh, I know.
I mean, house is on fire.
No, I don't mean for that. Our house, everything is just, everybody interrupts each other. There is just, it's just a, our whole house is a whirling dervish of people.
That's your address, 1703 Whirling Dervish Lane.
Oh, you know, I just got a text here, a Facebook message from a listener.
What happened?
She points out the delay on Alexa for the ticket giveaway.
What does that mean?
Oh,
I don't know what that means.
Are you really trying to make me pop a gasket?
That's a great point. Because people listening on Alexa are listening a little later.
Papa Gasket and Mama Gasket are going to be, when you and Jimmy have grandkids, that's what they're going to call you guys.
So it should be like caller 10 if you're listening on a radio and caller 18
I get it,
if
because
you're,
of the delay. All right. Yeah. Now that makes sense. All right.
I wash my hands of it. If you guys can handle it. All I'm saying is we have a 4-pack of White Sox tickets to give away. It is great. You know, and I thought I was pleasant. I came in and said, what a great day for sitting at a ball game.
You're still pleasant, but there's just the. You take a route of conflict. Like conflict is like all around you. I wouldn't recognize you without it. I would go, I don't know who this is.
That's what drives me.
That's what I'm saying.
I wish it would drive me in because traffic is a nightmare too. There is no easy way to get here. There is. In the old days, you would drive to work during rush hour and it would take you, like, say, 52 minutes every single solitary day.
Yeah.
Today, it can take me 25 minutes or it can take me 3 hours and 9 minutes.
Right.
It's never the same.
I love it. That's why I still have a job.
You totally have a job.
I think Mary keeps that going. Mary tips
it's my
people
vibe.
Money
it's my traffic mean
to drive erratically to create more traffic situations so she has a job to go to.
But Mary, don't you recall years ago, I mean, your commute was pretty much the same every day, barring 5 minutes difference.
Right.
But now it can be as much as like a half hour difference in your time.
It's construction season.
Yeah.
It started up. Yeah. Actually, construction season is all the time now. It's even all winter. So it doesn't matter.
That I knew I did.
Oh, my God.
I know. It's fun. It's fun to
watch. I'm glad I amuse you.
It's fun. All right. We will take a break. What did you do? Were you saying that we had White Sox tickets to give away? Is that true? No?
How are you going to do that?
Don't. Please.
Oh,
don't jab the bear.
Hey. Ask Alexa.
Do not jab the bear, Steve. All right.
Jab, it's poke.
Do not poke the bear.
Wait, you're okay with bear?
That was not a problem at all. Bear, I'll take that. All right. More after this. It's Phil and Wendy on WGN.
I want to tell you that I watched the 70-year anniversary of WGN-TV, hosted by our friend Tom Skilling, and Dean Richards did some hosting, Micah Mater did, Lourdes Duarte. It was really good.
What's the absolute highlight, the best thing you saw on the show?
The best thing was seeing Garfield Goose with my son Michael and hearing the...
Oh, yes.
How does Garfield look now?
Well, he's in a retired puppet's home now.
Is he?
In Elk Grove Village.
My God, how old could he be?
He's nearly 90. Now, that's the sounder that if I was listening to the show and I heard that, I'd say to myself, I would like to be caller number 11 right now at 312-981-7200. I'd say caller 11 probably is going to walk away with a 4-pack of tickets to a White Sox game. So I would want to be caller 11 when hearing that at 312-981-7200.
That's right. We have a family. We have 4-pack of tickets to see the Chicago White Sox versus, who are they versing, Mom? The Houston Astros at 1:10 p.m. It's a Sunday, April 22nd game, which is a week from Sunday, I believe.
Your world champion. Champlain.
Clay?
Your world yes. Your world champion, Houston Astros.
Really?
Yeah, they won the World Series last year.
They're not going to win it this year. Keep listening for that sounder. The one that you just heard.
Right. You can keep listening all day. You've already heard it. So call right now. Be caller 11.
All right. Caller 11 is this person right here. Hi, whom are you?
It's Priscilla. Priscilla from Westchester.
Hey, Priscilla. Priscilla. Have you been to any White Sox games yet this young season?
Oh, no, not at all. No.
Well, we will change all that for you.
Yes, thank you.
You got a 4-pack here, Priscilla. Do you know who you're bringing?
Probably my husband.
Two more? Yeah, you got a 4-pack.
Donna and Joe.
Yep, I would have gone Donna and Joe also.
Didn't you bring Donna and Joe?
A couple times. We have a nice time. Donna has some crazy stories about the war.
All right, well, Priscilla.
I love the show.
Thank you so much. Hang on, and hopefully you can bring them a win, okay?
Oh, thank you very much, Wendy and Bill.
Thank you very much. Congrats.
So whenever you hear that sounder that you heard earlier, whoever's on the air will tell you to call in and what caller number to be, and you will score some Chicago White Sox tickets all regular season long. How about that?
That's pretty good. All right, go back to this WGN special, because I have DVR'd it. I've not seen it yet.
It's really good.
So it's all 70 years. It's how it started. It's all the changes that have happened.
Yeah, I will give you, I have one complaint.
What is the complaint?
I learned a lot about the history of the television station. It was really great. Everyone did a great job. But at the very end, they had a little montage of some of the highlights of over the years. And they had BJ and Dirty Dragon, but he didn't make it into the bulk of the program. And that broke my heart.
Were they on Channel 9?
I'm thinking 32 for BJ.
See, I thought 32 as well. But why did they show that then?
I don't know, because they were definitely 32.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Maybe one of the incarnations of his show was BJ's Giggle Snort Hotel on Channel 9. Cartoon Town was Channel 32. There's no doubt in my mind that was 32.
I'm sure. I always watched him on 32.
God, I love Bill Jackson.
He came to the Paramount Theater in Kankakee when I was a kid.
Oh, did he?
Oh, it was great. I had him one of the carnivals. I always wanted to host those. Remember
the muscular dystrophy carnivals?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You could do it in your backyard. Yeah.
I totally did that.
Yeah.
That was such a great thing. And he'd have that giant piece of paper, and kids would send in their initials. And I so many times would write WSS, and then I would draw myself being a radio announcer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Much like Bill Jackson did.
You
would send in your initials.
Yeah, and he would take your initials and put them on a giant piece of paper with a magic marker.
Right.
It wasn't a Sharpie. It was the squeaky marker.
Right.
And he'd get high off the fumes, and then he'd continue to make a cartoon about you, and it was awesome.
Right.
He's such a great cartoonist. And I also made my mom buy me some gray clay because Play-Doh wouldn't work. And I cut out cardboard eyes and mouths, and I would have my own blob.
He
was my idol.
He's the reason Steve and I wear derby hats every day.
Every day.
Because I had a red suit and a blue suit because
of him.
Just like
he did.
But I'm glad you guys are talking about him because he kind of gets forgotten, I think, you know?
He should not be.
And it was just a great show.
He was such a visionary.
And he was cute. I got to tell you, that might have been my first crush.
Had the big sideburns when they were fashionable.
Yeah.
Actually, he also had them when they were not fashionable.
They're fashionable
again. They're back again. They are back again. I don't know if they talked about this on the WGN 70th anniversary special, but in the early days of WGN TV, a comedy team came, and it was Bob Bell, who went on to play Bozo. And do you know who his partner was? Did they say?
I know that one.
I can't remember, but yeah.
It was Wally Phillips, the morning guy here at WGN Radio. They were a comedy team for years.
That was mentioned, I believe. I might have fallen asleep a little bit during something.
Because of that part.
No.
I didn't tune into this to hear about comedy teams from the 50s.
You know, I've been getting up very early with this crazy puppy. I look at my hands and I have puppy bites all over me. I might have fallen asleep during parts of it, but I do remember Bob Bell not being dressed up in makeup.
We had a book, and I don't remember the title of the book, but when I was a kid, my dad got a book about what was then the history of WGN, the radio and the television end, and there wasn't that much of it because the book was written like in 1963 or 4.
Oh, yeah.
But there were a couple of pictures that showed the comedy team of Bell. What are they? I can't remember who got top billing, if it was Wally or if it was Bob Bell. I think it was Bell and Phillips, I think, was the name of the comedy team. And then they couldn't figure out where to put them exactly, and they go, well, let's try him on TV, let's try him on the radio. And in both cases, it worked out tremendously well.
Well, it was a really good special. And
will they show it again? Do we know? Oh, although I have a DVR, so I'm covered.
Yeah, but I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. The Gar and
Gar.
That's on a lot. Every minute.
I was just looking up while you guys were talking. The Giggle Snort Hotel was on Channel 7, actually, beginning in 75.
Well, then why did they show them at the end of the montage?
And so that earlier he was on 32, and then the Giggle Snort was second and came on 75 on Channel 7.
Maybe there was a later incarnation of the show that wasn't called Cartoon Town anymore, and I think that may have aired on WGN TV.
That's what I'm saying, Bill, though. I think from what I'm reading, that was the Giggle Snort Hotel, which started in 1975 on Channel 7. The earlier show was on 32.
But Giggle Snort was different. That was built differently than Cartoon Town. Like he did a revival version for a short time of Cartoon Town, but called it something else. Like the BJ and Dirty Dragon Hour or something like that. Does that ring a bell with anybody?
Yeah.
So that might have been on Channel 9.
There's an exhibit at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. I forgot about that. There's Bill Jackson stuff.
He's still alive, according to Wikipedia.
Yeah, he is. Dave Plyer keeps in contact with him.
Really?
Yeah.
We got to get him on.
He, all of a sudden...
Do we have to have Dave Plyer on if we have him
Dave
on, too?
Dave has insisted.
We could do both.
Yeah. Just not ask Dave any questions?
Right.
All right.
He'll turn his mic off.
Dave, just a minute.
He can come on, but I really would love to talk to Bill Jackson.
Yeah. You and I had him on years ago at The Loop, and he was shocked that people still remembered him.
I remember that.
Everybody who called up with a story, you could just hear him going, wow. Like, he couldn't believe people remembered him.
Now, he was just a local treasure, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
God, he really was an inspiration to me. Yeah. I did a lot of artwork and lettering because he had just a great way of printing. I still pride myself on having really neat printing because of Bill Jackson.
Didn't you date Maynard Thumbtwanger for a while?
Oh, God. You make everything just sound dirty.
That was a character.
I know it.
That was a guy on a show named Maynard Thumbtwanger.
That's why we like him, Wendy.
All right.
Was Lemon Joke Kid?
Yeah, he was on there. Weird
the
and Wally.
Yeah.
Mother, do you remember that lady's name, the older woman?
Plumber.
Mother Plumtree.
Mother
Plumtree.
Plumber's Crack, Mother Plumtree.
I make everything sound dirty. All right, a quick break and then more show. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Mortified.
Dear Diary.
Is it true that girls don't have orgasms the first time?
I just put down my Anne Frank diary. I can really relate to her struggle.
She said, a lot of what I wrote is about the two of you. And we said, what could you possibly have said that would be bad?
Dear Diary. Mom is a dork, a moron, and a geek. I hate her so much. Dad is a bitch and butt crust.
Oh, that's no way to talk.
I don't want to read my kids' diaries.
No,
what if they say that about me?
You definitely do not. There's a docuseries, which is a new phrase for me. I'm not familiar with that phrase, docuseries. It's a documentary, of course, drawn out over several episodes, and it's called Mortified. It's on Netflix. So far, I believe there's only 6 episodes, but Mike Mayer, one of the creators of the show, director, producer, showrunner for Mortified, is joining us right now. Mike, above and beyond all else, congratulations, because this thing is nothing but fun to watch.
Thank you so much. It was pretty great to make, I have to say.
How did this start?
Yeah, genesis.
Sure. So Mortified started as a stage show about 15 years ago, maybe even more by this point, when one guy, Dave Nadelberg, found a really horrible love letter that he had written to a girl in high school. I think he'd written several drafts, which is why he had some still.
And poor guy holding on to that.
Yep.
No, he literally found it in a shoebox, and he shared it with some friends, and they thought it was hilarious, and they shared some things they had, and next thing you knew, there was a little stage show, and that turned into 10 cities worth of stage shows, and now it's up to 20 cities, some in other countries, where people get on stage and they read their own childhood writings in front of total strangers.
To uproarious applause and laughter. And what I think that does is it just says to everybody, there's nothing funnier than the truth, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's people sort of owning up to who they were back then and you know, how naive they were and misinformed and how they thought they knew everything. I mean, it's all that, rolled into one. And people love it because you know, we all were like that. And so you're sitting in the audience or you're at home watching it, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I had the same thoughts. I had the same hopes, the same fears when I was a kid. So you're identifying with it, but you're also laughing pretty darn hard.
There was a letter that I wanted. It was a love letter, I'll tell you right now, that I wanted to write to Donny Osmond. And I did write it to Donny Osmond. And it was on this awesome mushroom, a.k.a. Hobie stationery.
Yeah.
And I sealed it up, and I asked my mom for a stamp, and she said, I'd like to pre-read it and make sure it's okay. And I said, oh my God, you can't. So I ripped it up right in front of her. But now I'm thinking, if I would find that stuffed in a drawer, I'll bet you I did a couple versions of it.
Sure.
I think it really just said, I love you, like 100 times. But we all are so vulnerable.
Yeah. And Wendy, first of all, let me say, if you find that letter, call me.
All right.
You get on the air quick.
Yeah. You know, we are so vulnerable, and a lot of people don't want to share things that they find, but that's what's so actually brave about these people who get up and share things that, you know, we definitely wanted to keep secret when we were kids.
Right. So on every episode, for people who have not seen Mortified, what you're doing is you're meeting five or six people, and they're all telling the story of when they were younger. And I don't know if this was your idea, Mike, or somebody else connected with the show, but you have them in present-day form reading it in front of the crowd, and then behind them on a screen is a picture of their 9 or 10 or 11-year-old self. So yeah. In our brains, we're seeing the duality of a human being, the early days and the now days, and it's just so refreshing and fun to see.
Yeah, we wanted to make it clear that, you know, this is an adult reading their childhood writings. That it's not like, you know, anything. They're pretty horrible and embarrassing writing. So we just want to connect and always tell people, like, okay, they wrote this when they were 11, or this person wrote this when they were 15. Because I think it's really important to understand, you know, what time in their life they were at.
Sure.
And they wrote what they wrote.
Yeah.
And I should just clarify that Mortified has many incarnations now. So we did a movie several years ago called Mortified Nation. That's also on Netflix. And then the series is called The Mortified Guide.
Oh, okay.
And each episode, it's trust me, there's so much Mortified in my life. in the series, each episode is about a different universal childhood theme. So like, you know, fitting in, family, love and sex, things like that. Really big hitters, you know, in a childhood.
Yeah. One of my favorites was pop culture. I'm a pop culture fanatic, so I loved that episode. And I'll tell you, I keep wanting to have a favorite, Mike. Like every episode I go, no, that guy's my favorite. No, wait, she's my favorite. I think the girl who, she realized early on that she was a lesbian but didn't know exactly what to do with that knowledge. And the only character she could find on TV that was also a lesbian was Erica Kane's daughter on All My Children. So she wrote that girl, the actress, a fan letter. And then you guys, through the magic of television, got the actress to come and read the letter there. And boy, what a great payoff that was.
That was incredible. I mean, she, Kirsten, had really not been able to tell anybody who she was. She wasn't able to declare to her mom or to herself even, you know, that she was gay. Yeah. And it really was through watching a gay character on TV that's how she figured out who she was and how she got the courage to tell her mom. And so for somebody to then as an adult meet the person who kind of changed their life that much, it was incredible. It was very heartfelt. And also really embarrassing, because the things she wrote about the actress were pretty embarrassing. So to hear him said back to her was pretty great.
But Mike, that's the best part of the show, is there are moments there where you're crying and laughing at the exact same time, and that's hard to pull that off.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just the guy who put the show together. Honestly, the reason it works is because of the people who are sharing, because they are sharing themselves, and it's really funny. But ultimately, these are all very heartfelt stories, because it's people kind of finding themselves or being, you know, for whatever reason. There's just so much that we connect with in this series.
I find it shocking that enough people are willing to share their innermost childhood letters, because we're all worried about image and we're all worried about being judged so many times that thankfully these people are revealing their inner thoughts from years ago.
You know, it's interesting, and I think what the reason it happens is because, let me put it this way, almost everybody who winds up getting on stage at one point was in the audience. So it's being in the audience and hearing somebody else get up on stage and be that brave person and connecting to what they're saying. Like you, Wendy, people go, oh, you know, I have stuff in my closet that that I think I might be able to find. And having seen somebody else do it, they go, I could do this too. But not everybody, you know, who submits their writings winds up going on stage. Some of them back out. They say, I can't do it.
It's too powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, too powerful, too scary. Not
too true.
Ready for it yet.
Yeah.
Maybe, not ready for it yet. I mean, they may be able to reveal that at a later time. I've never heard of this. I'm so glad you're on the air with us, Bill. Thank you for turning me on to this. I want to see it. I want to see everything. Where do I go to see? There's stage, there's TV and film, there's podcast, there's radio. Where do I go to see Mortified?
Okay, so first of all, there's a website, getmortified.com, and there you'll see information about the Mortified podcast, and which is on been going on for a couple of years now, and also about the live stage shows, and there's stage shows in Chicago. In fact, we shot some of our performances in Chicago for the movie Mortified Nation. And then you can go to Netflix to see the documentary Mortified Nation and the series, The Mortified Guide, that just came out.
You tell me the answer to this, Mike, because I can't figure it out. I've watched the 6 episodes on Netflix. I noticed that the word journal is used almost all the time, but the word diary is hardly ever used. Why is everybody avoiding the word diary instead of journal?
You know, I never thought about that. In general, women say that they wrote in diaries, and men say that they wrote in journals. I don't know why. That's just sort of the nomenclature.
It's more ladylike to say a diary,
it is,
you know?
Isn't it?
So,
I guess it is. Yeah.
And they're usually pink with a little key, you know.
Yeah.
I never had a diary.
Oh.
I never had a journal either. Just love letters to Donny Osmond.
Oh.
That's funny. I mean, one of the things we always want to point out is that it's not just journals and diaries. There's also people sharing the lyrics they wrote when they were kids or poems, which can be even more embarrassing. So I think, you know, we talk about artifacts, like we're archaeologists digging back and finding these artifacts in people's childhood. And diaries are certainly part of that.
Mike Mayer is our guest, director and showrunner for Mortified. There's several versions of it, as we've pointed out, the Mortified Guide, Mortified Nation. We'll continue this discussion in just a little bit. If you'd like to join in, 312-981-7200, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Mike Mayer, the director and showrunner for the Mortified Guide and Mortified Nation. You can find them easily on Netflix. What you have there is adults reading their journals, their diaries, their notebooks, from when they were children, oftentimes to hilarious results. We've got a bunch of texts, Mike, people who have seen the show and like it.
Now, I guess you talked about this show on the air before.
A few weeks back, I did.
And somebody said, I watched this on your recommendation, Bill, and I couldn't stop watching it. So funny. That's from 847. Somebody says, Wendy, I love Donny Osmond, too. Still do.
Yeah.
And 708, binged on Mortified on your recommendation, Bill. Love it. Laughter and tears. Real people, real stories.
Yeah. And Mike, like I said, it's hard to pull that off, but you guys do it pretty much every time around. Do me a favor. I talked about this girl when I saw the episode a few weeks ago, but I want your take on it. The girl who was in love with Katharine Hepburn, her parents were very religious and wouldn't let her watch most television stations, but they let her watch AMC American Movie Classics. She fell in love with Katharine Hepburn and sent her a letter trying to save her soul. Do you remember this girl?
Oh, I remember.
She's from Peoria, I believe, right? Peoria, Illinois?
Yeah. And that was an amazing piece, because she wasn't allowed to watch, as you said, she wasn't allowed to watch really anything, no MTV, no nothing. And so the classic movies became her only sort of pop reference. And at the same time, she was extremely religious.
Yeah.
And decided that Katharine Hepburn needed to be extremely religious too.
Right.
And
she had read that Katharine Hepburn was an atheist, and she thought, "Oh, this is terrible. This great actress isn't going to know what's going to happen after she dies."
Right, so she went out on this mission to save Katharine Hepburn.
Oh my God!
Who at that point, you know, had already won however many Oscars and really didn't probably want to be saved.
Right,
a 13-year-old girl. But no, it was. That's an example of, you know, how we, when we're growing up, we think we know everything. You know, adults know nothing. It's embarrassing. I mean, and she looks back on it with embarrassment. I mean, she's mortified that she did this, and yet she felt it was important to share.
You can keep going with this thing forever, Mike. It's like the vagina monologues. You can just do it on stage, do it live, and then pretty soon people will be talking about their tweets that they made when they were younger and inexperienced, not just letters. This will go on forever.
Yeah, you're right. And in fact, it's expanded into other countries. We're in England. We're in France. We are making a TV show in Holland now that's very similar to the Mortified Guide show. So, and the funny thing is every time we go to a different country, and launch Mortified, people go, well, you know, I know that worked in other places, but it's not going to be the same here. And without fail, it's the same. It's the same. And no matter where you are, people had secrets. They had the same universal fears and hopes when they were kids, and they identify.
But much like
for Netflix, we had to. Sorry to interrupt. But
oh, that's
for Netflix, we had to translate it into 23 different languages. So
wow.
The Mortified Guide is out there in the world in 23 different languages. So we keep getting these tweets in like Italian or Portuguese and things like that. It's
that's
great.
Awesome and hard work. Yet, you know, having to do all those different languages. God, that's amazing.
Well, I didn't have to do it, but somebody did.
Somebody had to do it. But Mike, and this Katharine Hepburn girl illustrates the point is that there's that realization, and you see it sometimes play out right there on the stage, that I couldn't have been more wrong. I was so strong in my convictions at some point in my life, but boy, was I wrong. And it's so funny to see it happen time and time again, because I think that's something, no matter who you are or where you are anywhere on the globe, we all have that. Boy, was I wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I still have that.
Yeah.
But
Mike, what is your embarrassing mortified letter or communication?
So I actually came to Mortified as an audience member, too. I was invited to a stage show in Hollywood way back when, and it just blew my mind. And I didn't have any of my childhood writing saved. So instead of getting up on stage, I, you know, wound up becoming the director and showrunner and became possible for other people. I'm kind of glad I didn't, because I don't know if I'd be ready. I think it's too scary. I'm in awe of these people, honestly.
Can I tell you, Mike, I'm not a jealous person, but what I was jealous of is I did stand-up comedy for 10 years, and I thought to myself, these guys are essentially doing a form of stand-up comedy, but all they're doing is telling the truth. There's no sugarcoating.
Yeah.
They're just reading the absolute words that they wrote and getting huge laughs, and there was a part of me that was almost jealous at how effortless it was.
It's like just being yourself. You know, it's real life is stranger than fiction. Real life is funnier than fiction sometimes, too. I mean, it's just being yourself and being honest, you know, just makes the audience like just so welcoming and ready to hear you. And so I mean, the humor comes out. It's there.
Everyone loves a genuine person. Mm. There's no way around it.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, you have to tell me when there's more episodes.
Wait, Bill, what do you have?
I was never a child. I've always been.
He still is one, is what he's saying, Mike.
Nothing embarrassing. I wish so badly. It made me wish I had written stuff down, because I would have loved to. I mean,
you never wrote a poem to
anyone? I have little bits and pieces of stuff, but I don't have like full journal stories. They've got to be there somewhere. When will there be new episodes, Mike? When can we expect more episodes on Netflix?
Oh man, I don't know. We haven't really had that conversation with Netflix yet. This season almost broke me. I have to spend some time with my wife and kids.
Sure.
But once I kind of collect myself, you know, we'll start thinking about that for sure.
Oh, I hope there's more.
Yeah, because you don't want to read a letter from your wife like, my husband spends all of his time on this new project in 23 different languages.
Would be the worst.
Well, it is ironic. I'm spending all this time with other people's childhood.
That's crazy. Mike, love the show. It's so entertaining, and I tell everybody about it, so keep up the great work over there. It's The Mortified Guide and Mortified Nation. They're on Netflix. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Yeah, and keep in touch when the new eps drop, okay?
Okay.
Perfect. Thank you, Mike. Mike Mayer, everybody. We'll take a quick break, then some news, then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Gather around. This is Reverend Tim Tom, and we'll be going on a sabbatical.
I don't WGN, hits of the 1840s. Wendy, did you realize that there is a love-hate relationship between the American language and the British language?
I did not know that.
And you speak both, right?
Hello.
There, I proved it. You proved it. The Prodigal Tongue is the name of the book that Lynn Murphy has put together. She joins us right now to talk about that love-hate relationship. How are you, Lynn? Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I got to tell you right now, when you hear somebody say something with a British accent, they just, it sounds so mellifluous and so beautiful, even if they're like yelling at you.
See, I've lived with them long enough that I just hear the yelling.
You're currently a citizen. You live there, right, in Great Britain?
I've lived there for 18 years. I became a citizen a little while ago, yeah.
All right, congrats on that. So what did you most have to get used to growing up here in the United States and then living in England? What was the biggest change for you?
Oh, goodness. There were so many changes. To go with the change that's the theme of the book, mm-hmm. is that I just always talked like I talk as an American, as somebody who grew up around Rochester, New York. And, when I was in Britain, I got some guff for it. You know, I was often told that, you know, it was fine for me to talk my way, but we had to all be careful of American English taking over the world.
Oh, wow.
Was it
very political?
Were they warning you to be careful, yeah. Lynn, that I just feel like Americans have no filter out there. I'll say it because I have no filter. Is that it? Like we reveal too much of ourselves? Is that one of the things that bothered them?
That's definitely a stereotype they have of American people. I think that's a bit less true of me than the average American. But you know, there is a sense that American English words are coming over to Britain and displacing the old British words, and people worry about that. People worry about, you know, the Big Bang Theory being on the television 8 times a day and how that's going to affect the English that's spoken over in Britain.
What are some examples?
Well, one thing that people get very upset about is ordering coffees in a coffee shop by saying, can I get a coffee? Or can I get a latte grande or whatever? That can I get a, is not something that would have naturally been said in Britain, but a lot of people attribute its use in Britain to exposure through things like the sitcom Friends. And so younger people use it, and the older people look at it and say, well, that's not a polite way to ask for a coffee. We shouldn't do that. That sounds too American.
So we need to say, may I please have a cup of coffee?
Governor.
something like that.
So to the Brits, it's a dumbing down of the language, isn't it? Because our pop culture is just infiltrating, and it's dumbing it down, right?
Well, I mean, that's how it's perceived. I would say it's not dumbing it down. It's just, you know, making it more interesting in various ways, you know, because language always changes and the older people always think, oh, the younger people are ruining our language. But, you know, it's what English does. It's what English has been doing for 1,000 years. So I wouldn't worry about it. But what I'd like people to do, and you know, part of why I wrote the book was to enjoy the differences and to notice that there are a lot of them.
Well, now with Meghan Markle, who is going to be joining the throngs of royalty, are we going to see maybe the royalty not be so prim and proper? Is she going to loosen things up, do you think?
I think that entire generation of royals is a bit looser than the one before, and I'm sure that's happened over the generations. But I think there is a sense that Marco coming in has made things a little bit more relaxed, at least in Harry's house.
Tell me your thoughts on this, Lynn. I've noticed that both languages, well, it's the same language, but there's the British version and the American version. We tend to overemphasize. There are words that we use that are superlatives. For instance, here in America, we'll say that something is awesome, even when it's not truly awesome, whereas in Britain, mm-hmm. they'll say something is fantastic or smashing when it's not really fantastic.
Or brilliant.
Yeah. So we're kind of playing the same game, just slightly different ways, right?
Yeah, there are some words and some meanings that are really apt to change in English, and those kinds of words for exaggerating or for saying something's good, you know, they used to say groovy. We don't say far out anymore. Those words change a lot because they lose their power after they're overused for a while. So now a lot of, you know, my 10-year-old daughter who's British, she says awesome, but her children won't, you know. That's the kind of thing that changes a lot.
Like a flavor of the day type word, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does she ever make fun of you? Are there certain American words or phrases that you still use that your daughter will make fun of you for?
She doesn't make fun of me, but when she was just 2.5, and she said to me, "You say bath, Daddy say boss." And I said to her, "What are you going to say?" And she said, "I say boss." So, you know, she knew immediately which side of the ocean she was on.
You know what makes me laugh is anytime a British person says bananas, they always, always, always say bananas, and it always makes me laugh. I don't know why.
It's an amusing word in any accent, I think.
Bananas. How about this? In Britain, they'll always say in hospital instead of in the hospital, or on holiday instead of on a vacation. Why that difference?
Okay, well, the in hospital is, it's like you say you're in college or, you know, at church. You don't say at the church if you're going there to do the thing that you're supposed to do at that place. And that's the same thing for in hospital in Britain. You can only say you're in hospital if you're a patient.
Oh.
If you're a doctor, you're walking around in the hospital.
Oh.
So it signals that being a patientness the way that I'm in college signals, you know, the studentness.
Yeah.
So there's that. And I think the reason why that one developed was because hospitals as places to treat the sick really only got going after the two countries split up. And the was lost in Britain after the two countries split up. So we just went our own way saying different things. Vacation is a word that you do find in Britain a little bit, but it's only used of university breaks. So Cambridge and Oxford have vacations. But
like a spring vacation.
It just means the part of the calendar when the place is vacant.
Other than that, it's holiday. It's not a holiday.
Other than that, it's holiday. Huh. You go on holiday.
Lynn Murphy's on the line with us. Her book is called The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. Let's talk about some of the slang words. What should I be adding to my vernacular?
Oh, I have... I think it's hard to add slang to your vernacular because, you know, slang tends to come from teenagers. And if you're not a teenager and you try to use the slang, then you do, you know, sort of sound a little bit, try too hard. But some of the words that have come up from Britain that Americans have liked and some have started using are things like gobsmacked, which means surprised. A gob is the mouth. And so it's smacking you in the face, surprising. So you're gobsmacked.
My gob is always moving. I didn't know gob meant mouth.
Oh, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, and if you're gobby, you're mouthy. You know, so,
sure.
So you talk a lot and are a bit obnoxious. So,
that would,
you know,
be me.
Those kinds of words.
What about this? When I was a kid, Lynn, I watched a lot of the British comedies, and I learned British rhyming slang. Like, if you're in trouble, you're in a 2 and a 6, a 2 and 6, which rhymes with a fix. It's very convoluted. It's very. I know it's strange, but does that still go on, the British rhyming slang?
One of the quotes in the book from, I can't remember from whom, says, it's more assiduously spoken in the media than in the actual East End of London, because it has become something that's popular with people. You know, it's a popular story to tell, but very little rhyming slang really gets used today. There are some things that hang around. So, for example, apples and pears for stairs,
yeah.
Or, you know, china plate for mate. But you wouldn't actually say he's my china plate. You'd say he's my china.
Yeah.
You leave off the rhyming word, and that makes it a secret slang.
I have no idea what you guys confused. Are talking about.
All right, so would you say that probably peaked sometime in the 70s, maybe 80s, right?
I think it peaked probably even earlier than that.
Oh, did it? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I used to watch.
Not actually sure.
There was a show called No Honestly.
Claire and CD.
And they spoke in British rhyming slang all the time. And you kind of had to learn it to understand what they were talking about.
And I'm kind of hearing a British accent and kind of not. But you're from here originally, correct, Lynn?
Yeah, I'm from upstate New York. And yes, my accent lives someplace in Atlantis, I think, because it I've lived away from where I grew up for a long time. I've lived in South Africa and in Texas, but now I've lived in England for 18 years. And because I have to speak to people on a daily basis, because I lecture, I really need to enunciate in a way that, you know, people won't have to try extra hard to understand me.
Sure, sure.
Is that what happens, though, when you move? I know when I went to Georgia one summer, I started saying, could I have a Coca-Cola? Because you're trying to talk like that. But then it kind of becomes fun. Is that how an accent develops? Like you're mimicking them at first and then you live it? Is that how it works, Lynn?
I think it's really individual. So some people will, you know, I've got American friends in England who have not adjusted at all. And then I've got British friends in America who you'd think were American.
Interesting.
But Lynn,
it's really individual.
Much like America, in England there are so many different regional dialects, you almost can't keep track, right?
There are a lot of them. And the thing, since Britain is so much smaller than America, the accents are much closer, physically closer together. They sound really different. So if you're in Liverpool, you know, you sound like
the Beatles.
Paul McCartney.
Yeah, yep. Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And just a few miles down the road in Manchester, you'd sound completely different.
And now for something completely different.
Yeah.
And then slightly further down the road, you know, across the country in Newcastle, you'd sound completely different again, so you'd sound like Cheryl Cole, who I understand had a very hard time on American television, did not last long there because nobody could understand her.
How about that?
So some British accents are easier for Americans to understand than
others.
Oh,
my God. When I first started watching Monty Python with my family, I would just laugh when they laughed because I could totally not understand them at all. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, Lynn. Lynn Murphy, The Prodigal Tongue, where's the best place to pick up your book?
Oh, anywhere that fine books are sold.
The Prodigal Tongue. Look for it, as Lynn pointed out, wherever better books are sold. Thank you, Lynn. Appreciate it.
And thank you.
Take care.
I am a gob. I have a big, big gob.
Yeah. Yes.
That's my new word.
Yes.
Bill, you have traveled the world over.
Yes.
I've been to Berwyn.
Yes.
That's about it.
Yes.
I know what Chicago-style pizza is.
Yes.
I know what New York-style... Would New York-style pizza be like a Sbarro? Kind of, where it's like not a pan pizza, but not a thin crust. It's kind of like a pliable.
A hybrid. Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Detroit has a type of pizza?
Yeah.
What?
And I don't know exactly how to describe it accurately, but there are more and more pizza places popping up that have what they refer to as Detroit-style pizza. And it's an interesting flavor. It takes a little while to get used to. It's good, but for me, you almost have to kind of be in the mood for it, you know?
All right. It's according to Wikipedia, which I hate, but that is the first. It's never right because people can change things. But they say Detroit style pizza is a style of pizza developed in Detroit, Michigan.
Oh,
is that true?
I would not have guessed that.
It's a rectangular pizza that has a thick, crisp crust and toppings such as pepperoni and mushrooms.
Yeah.
What makes Detroit-style pizza different from Chicago and New York styles is the crust, which is extra thick and very crispy on the bottom. There's a place, is it in Cicero, called Freddy's Pizza, that it would come like almost on a cookie sheet. Like rectangular thing with kind of like a focaccia type of crust.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I forgot you. I would have asked you to come with, but I forgot you. It's kind of airy.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Like fluffy almost.
That's, yeah.
That's Detroit-style pizza?
I think that's the main
difference. Not a ton of cheese.
But it's
almost like pizza bread.
Right. So the places that have popped up around town in the last couple of years go out of their way to let you know that it is Detroit. They want you absolutely to know this is different than what you're used to. This is Detroit-style pizza. And like I said, I've now had it three times. The first time I wasn't thrilled with it. The second time I was kind of getting used to it. And by the last time I had it, I go, okay, it's a very different experience. It's still pizza, but it's a different flavor, you know?
I got to try it now.
I
have never
like
had it.
Yeah.
I think Freddy's is different. I think, well, no, because I'm looking, is that what Detroit pizza looks like?
Yeah.
It is exactly what I said. It's
almost in a casserole dish, almost, kind of, sort of, you know? It's a plate. They make it on this plate that's not, you know, we're used to our traditional round pizza.
Yeah.
It's more than just the shape, though. It's the way the crust is thrown in. And I'm
like
not
a
doing
jelly
it
pan. That's what they call
yeah.
it. It's a cookie sheet, but
yeah.
there's depth to it.
Yeah.
And it's like the crust is like that, but it looks light and fluffy. It's not like a
right.
gummy crust, and it's not a pan pizza. It's different.
Right. But most of the same ingredients that you'd get on a traditional pizza that we're used to, you're still getting that.
Pizza's pizza.
Yeah.
I mean, there's thin, thick, and medium.
Right.
Is that medium?
Of the three options, it would be more like that. Yeah.
What's your favorite?
I don't have favorites.
What, depending
you know
how
sometimes
on the day,
you're in the mood,
yeah.
right? There's times you're in the mood for a thinner. There's time you want a stuffed or a pan. So
now I want pizza.
Yeah, I knew that would happen.
Damn.
All right, a quick break, some news, more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Hi, Bill.
Hey.
I want to talk movies. Can we talk movies? There's a movie that you saw that I want to see, and I can't wait to see it.
A Quiet Place. Very entertaining movie.
Quiet Place.
A Quiet Place.
A Quiet Place.
Patrick McDonald joins us right now, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com, and he's the guy who runs Hollywood Tours here in Chicago. Chicago Film Tours.
we'll get it right.
We'll fix it in the editing. Here's what's cool about A Quiet Place.
Yes.
Is that much like the old movies, you know there's a creature out there, and
yep.
you know he's doing very, very bad things, but in
yep.
the first half of the movie, the first two-thirds of the movie, you only see a little bit and piece of him every once in a while.
Yeah.
Instead of just showing him blatantly at the beginning and not building any suspense, they were wise enough to build suspense. That's missing in a lot of movies.
Yes, attention in that movie is its biggest selling point. And Emily Blunt, she was just excellent in that
She
film.
Was good, wasn't she?
She was really good.
John Krasinski, who most people would know from The Office, he mm-hmm. played Jim on The Office. He stars in it. He co-wrote it with two other writers, and he directed it. And nothing but impressive. I really liked it.
Yeah, it's a big improvement over his first film, The Hollers. Did you see The Hollers?
I did not see that.
It was a family picture about a
That's
matriarch.
More like me than The Quiet family.
Right.
Well, a Quiet Place is a family picture, too.
Yeah, but I can't keep quiet. That's what Bill's saying. I'd be dead in 10 seconds.
So everything's extreme with him. It's either hollering or nobody's talking at all. Wouldn't it be ironic if this movie won the Academy Award for Best Sound Design?
It's possible.
The guy never had to show up. He's just like, yeah, just don't record any sound at all.
Can I ask, when did John Krasinski become such a movie mogul?
Well, he came out of The Office wanting to do that. So he got financing for his first film, which is called The Hollers.
Yeah.
It's with Richard Jenkins, and he plays a matriarch is dying in the family. It's one of those types of
yeah.
films. And it was okay. And he came, and actually I interviewed him when he came through on that one. And I think most filmmakers, they want to make enough so they can make their next movie. Well, now he can really go to town.
Yeah, this did really good. It's opening weekend made
million.
Over 50. Yeah, that's excellent.
Yeah.
You have a theory as to why we're seeing more and more horror movies,
yes.
and it's an easy answer,
well,
but
yes.
go ahead.
Well, they make money.
Yeah.
They're made on the cheap. Blumhouse is the big production company now. They did the Paranormal Activity mm-hmm. series, the Insidious series, the Purge series. They produced Get Out last year,
mm-hmm.
which was a, you know, kind of a departure for them because that was more of a comic serious movie.
I still will not accept that that's comical. I'm not kidding. Get Out was not. There
you
were
can't
bizarre moments,
it, right?
Yeah.
There's parts that are really scary. There's parts that were really funny. There's parts that were very, filled with drama. It was a little bit of everything. So it's hard to
social
categorize.
Social conscious thriller.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a new subgenre.
Yeah.
The social conscious thriller.
You're just making stuff up now.
But their newest movie is Truth or Dare, and the premise is so, I mean, you could describe this in a sentence.
Yes. It's just, you know, the old Truth or Dare game. And if you lie or you don't take the dare, you're dead.
Yeah.
From an unseen force. There's always an unseen force, Bill.
What were the movies a couple years ago? They did four or five of them where death was supposed to claim somebody and it didn't. So it was going to seek revenge on a group of teenagers.
Yes, it was.
It's always teenagers. It's never a bunch of old people. Why?
I don't know.
What is death? Teenagers are annoying.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is.
I have two of them.
But here we go.
But through all these movies, including Truth or Dare, what you're going to get for 95 minutes is a series of will that guy die or will that girl die? They're all going to come, and you're going to see them all just perish in different ways.
There's a good formula on those.
Right.
It just doesn't go away, I think.
I guess not.
I just saw in the Latino Film Festival with Danny Trejo, there was a film called Murder in the Woods. They went to a cabin. One by one, they're killed.
That's never happened before.
It's never happened before.
So original. So original. I saw a preview. Wendy, you got to see this preview. I don't know how the movie's going to play out, but remember Johnny Knoxville?
Yeah.
From Jackass. Jackass. Right? All right.
I'm a big fan of his, actually.
You're shaking your head. You know what's coming.
I know what's coming. Right. I do.
The premise of this whole movie is Johnny Knoxville decides, and it's told in flashback. He starts out as an old man, and he's remembering back to his heyday when he and his friends bought a water park.
Right.
And it was, the worst water park in the world.
Action Point.
Action Point.
Yes.
So the whole movie, much like the Truth or Dare movies, is they show mishaps on water park rides.
I think I saw the preview.
That's it.
Apparently, this is one of those. Now, I may be dating myself here, but the Enchanted Forest in Northwest Indiana was that type of park back in the day.
That maybe the safety standards weren't quite as good as they maybe possibly.
Instead of a one-armed man, he had two limbs missing.
Yes.
All right. When you see somebody doing some kind of an accident where they hit their chin, or there are videos of people jumping in a pool, anything water related, I get this weird feeling in my stomach when they hit something or fall. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about. This is the whole movie.
I can't see it. Why would I watch that?
I don't know why anyone would.
I love cheesy amusement parks because that's all we had when I was a kid.
Yeah.
They were all cheesy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm in.
The safety standards were not what they are today back then. I think that's why they told it in flashback, think.
They have to.
But I'm watching the preview. Did you ever sit through a preview where you go, oh, nobody's going to see this movie? Nobody. And then everybody around you is all excited. Oh, when does that open? I can't wait to see
Knoxville.
This.
Knoxville's huge, man.
Yeah.
He's a huge cult figure.
You know, every once in a while, though, he'll show up in something, and he's not a bad actor.
Like him.
He's likable.
He made a fortune on those Jack A movies.
I know.
Can't say that.
Patrick McDonald is here. He'll tell you what movies to see and avoid coming out this weekend. Stick around.
And by the way, Final Destination.
Final Destination. That's the name of those movies. All right. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Laffin, it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Patrick McDonald, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. And again, the tours, has this started yet, Patrick?
Yes, we've had what is called the soft opening. You call, if we have availability, get on the bus.
That's how it works.
Yep.
Get on the bus, Gus.
Yes.
All right, a couple of films opening this week. Let's start out with a very likely story, a story that I'm surprised doesn't happen more often, Rampage.
Yes. Yes. Actually, this is sort of a takeoff in the 1950s sci-fi. You know,
is it?
Had the radiation and the rabbits would grow big.
Yeah.
And,
Night of the Lepus.
Yes, there you go. So this is exactly what it is. Dwayne The Rock Johnson plays a primate expert at the San Diego Zoo, which, of course, that's the first guy I'd think of.
Yeah,
this looks good. I hate to admit.
It is good. It is good. It has that vibe, that, you know, that sci-fi vibe.
And it kind of teases itself a little bit, right? It knows that this probably won't happen.
There were several great opportunities to add jokes. As I was noting as it went on, but it's you know, the ape is his friend. He gets
is it a blonde ape?
It is an albino.
Yes.
Oh, it is
even better.
Yeah.
That's what she said. But anyway,
it looks pretty cool. Tell you, I mean,
it is cool. And they destroy Chicago. I mean, I think they destroy this building.
Oh,
I'm not sure.
Do they?
hell no, stop.
That's
please.
Rude. All right, so he befriends one of the animals he's friends with.
The albino ape who gets radiated along with a crocodile and a coyote.
Oh. Crocodile looks
mean. It's a space garbage. It comes in, you
the
know.
The crocodile looks mean, mm-hmm. Wendy, yeah.
Yeah, the crocodile is really
he's extreme.
Troublesome.
Yeah.
It's
imagine
Godzilla.
That in the Chicago River. Yes. Bye-bye, Wendella.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of... Why did they choose a crocodile for Chicago? We don't have any crocodiles
here.
Well,
he made his way up here.
Oh, all right.
The locks were open.
I mean, there's some absurdities in here that's unbelievable.
But entertaining.
But if you love to see Chicago destroyed like Transformers, you're going to love this movie. 3.5 out of 5.
Three and a half out of five?
Yes.
All right.
Other than The Rock, are there other people in there we recognize? Or is it mostly just...
You know, Malin Ackerman from...
Oh, yeah.
She's
good.
Jake Lacey, who I like. Naomi Harris, you know, the Bond girl.
Yeah.
She's
and one of the writers from Lost co-wrote this, right?
Oh, very good.
Yeah. All right. So 3.5 stars out of 5 for Primate. The other one is
Beirut.
Beirut. That's John Hamm, right?
John Hamm, yeah. He plays a Rick Blaine type character from Casablanca. Oh. This is, you know, Beirut, Casablanca. Same sort of premise in the sense that he is an anti-hero. He doesn't want to be a hero. He's forced back in. He's a diplomat in Beirut in 72. His wife gets killed in a terrorist attack. 10 years later, the CIA recruits him to go back into Beirut because they have a hostage situation.
Uh-huh.
So it's Hamm is perfect for the world-weary, alcoholic, you know, sad guy who lost his wife type.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Let me ask you this about him. He was so good as Don Draper on Mad Men. So sometimes that's a natural progression. You're a TV star, and now you're a movie star. Some guys have a harder time at it, and women too. John Hamm hasn't had a very easy time of it for some reason, but he seems a natural.
That's weird.
I can't figure it out. Why would that be?
You know, he needs to do movies like this, more character roles, comedy roles. I think he's done okay as a supporting guy.
Yeah.
You know, he was in Bridesmaids, remember?
Yeah.
He was great in Baby Driver. Come on.
I haven't seen Baby Driver.
I haven't either. And my kids
keep really
yelling at me saying how great it is.
Last year.
What was a stupid name. I can't get past
Baby
the
Driver.
Name.
It sounds like Mini Driver.
Kevin Spacey.
Baby Broadcaster?
Yeah, we're Baby Broadcasters. What was the Ben Affleck movie where he was a cop? There was some bank heist.
Right.
Remember a couple years ago?
Oh, man.
Was it Final Destination, Patrick?
Yes, it was.
I can't remember the name of it, but he was really good in that. And I went, okay, now they found a direction for him to be in movies. And then there was a while where he wasn't in movies anymore.
I think he's making a good turn of it right now. And he's great in Beirut. That's my movie of the weekend, 4 out of 5.
This is a drama, right?
It is a drama.
All right. You almost can't tell by the preview. It leans toward drama, but I wasn't sure.
It's another one that builds up tension. It's a big thriller, but it's a geopolitical tension, sir.
So it's not a war. The name might imply you get a lot of war footage, but you're not getting that.
No. But he's in the war zone. It was the Lebanese Civil War.
Yeah.
At the time, the Christian versus the Muslim.
Yeah.
Remember, there were green zones.
Yeah.
And everything in the town, and they had to go to Morocco, I guess, to find a city that had kind of the bombed out, because Beirut, I guess, is back.
Yeah.
You know, they're pretty much rebuilt. So. But they had to do that. You know, people are complaining about that, you know, the authenticity, and also they were complaining.
I've heard people, somebody just wrote an article what they got wrong about the movie Beirut.
Yeah. But, you know, Casablanca was filmed in California, so what are you going to do? It's a movie, it's a story.
You have to suspend belief.
Yeah. Yes, you do.
I know the summer movies are still a couple of weeks away.
Yes.
What's one or two that you just can't wait?
Well, I think...
It's going to be Avengers, right?
No, The Incredibles 2. That's what you got me on a few weeks ago. Yes, it's The Incredibles 2. I love the first one.
Yeah. That was a great movie.
It was really fun.
I think, you know, they've waited a long time to do it, so obviously they were waiting. Pixar always waits to get the script.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm going to have to say that one's really looking good to me.
The movie you're looking for was called The Town?
The Town. That was it, with John Hamm. It was really good. Ben Affleck, underrated as a director, in my opinion.
Yes, I do.
I think he's 3 for 3.
I think he's doing okay.
Yeah, though. He does really
good. I mean, you know, he's still underground right now because of the whole Me Too.
Yeah, I know. You're having a laugh at his expense.
I am.
Come on, Patrick.
Patrick's having a laugh about everything
he's
today.
He's too handsome.
That's the problem.
Ben Affleck.
He's just too handsome.
I'm jealous.
He's not handsome.
Well, I guess our taste in men are different.
Channing Tatum. Is that his name?
Channing Tatum.
He's not good looking either.
You always say Channing Tatum.
I know I do.
You do. It's the weirdest thing.
That's what they call him in Mad Magazine.
Do they? Is that his Mad Magazine name? The actress Susan Anspach died. Did you know that? I saw that yesterday.
Wow.
It's
what
getting
was her big
no
role?
Press at all.
That's why
was she in Five Easy Pieces?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, she was.
Yeah, with Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, and she had a distinctive look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very pretty. She was with Jack Nicholson for years, has a son by him, but you know who else she was married to?
Who?
This is a trivia question that no one in the world would get, not even the person whose name is the right answer. This is so obscure. She was married for years and years and years to a guy named Mark Goddard, who we all know from Lost in Space.
Oh, okay.
He was the handsome,
Oh, yeah.
But she probably started out in TV with him back in the 60s.
You know, episodic TV,
you know,
right.
All those players back then, you know.
She was only 75.
She was 75. Oh, I don't remember the last time I saw her in anything, but she had a streak like in the 70s and 80s where she was in a couple of movies a year. There's this movie called Montenegro that's this really bizarre movie that I saw in film school that she was so good in, but that was really sad. And like I said, she's not getting any press out on this at all.
Yeah, and you know, she was in the wave of the 1970s, you know,
like the Karen Black era.
Right.
I'm trying to think of who else was really prominent there.
Yeah,
Karen Black.
But she's one of those actresses where, and Karen Black, I guess, fit this to some extent too. It proves what Hollywood always says. It proves it true that once you reach a certain age as a woman, Jill Clayburgh is another one.
Yes,
it's so hard for them to find jobs, and it's sad because they're all such such incredible actresses, so competent, and they just couldn't find work.
Right, and you get to if you're in that B league, that's where you really get. I was thinking about that because Malin Ackerman came in for Michigan Avenue magazine, and I interviewed her on the red carpet. Not that she's
In The Watchmen?
Yes.
Yes.
I adore her.
Yeah. Yes. She's so good.
And
she's
Harold
a great,
and Kumar.
Great
she was in
comic
that.
Actress.
Yeah.
You know, she did The Comeback with Lisa Kudrow.
Yeah.
She was in the remake of The Heartbreak Kid and stole the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, stuff like that. And you know, she's progressing, and she's on Billions now on Showtime. So I think there's more options.
I hope
for women actresses and actors.
Let's hope so.
That's
Patrick MacDonald, everybody. He laughs
like
at other people's expense. That's where you know him from. Film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. Go to HollywoodChicago.com. All your information's there. Thank you, Patrick. We'll find out what Steve has on the Wintrust Business Lunch next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.